this morning we will be discussing genetic screening. Genetic screening has its issues with regards to many ethical issues, and they include a variety of issues that exist in the secular world. We could probably spend and devote lots of more time to those issues, consent, capacity, the issues of newborn screening. Newborn screening is essentially a part of our lives and everything that we do. Today we're going to focus on an area that is really related to the interface between where halakha plays a role with genetic screening. It gives me pleasure to introduce this morning our first speaker, Dr. Eisenberg, who will be discussing with us the genetic screening from a Jewish perspective. In your handout, in your booklet, you have the PDF copy of the slide. There's also a handout, which I will pass around here, for weight purposes, didn't make it to your handout, but I will make it available. Thank you.
Good morning. Hope everybody slept last night. The topic I'm supposed to speak about is the ethics of genetic screening from a Jewish perspective. But as I learned from Dr. Steinberg many years ago, my favorite quote is good ethics start with good facts. So you really can't discuss this unless you understand the genetics, so we'll talk about that for a few minutes first. I just want to tell people, if there's anybody who is a physician or a healthcare professional, there is a special little document put out by the Victor Center for the Prevention of Jewish Genetic Diseases, which is meant for healthcare workers in order to be able to counsel people. And I have another little handout that I don't have too many of, which is a young adult's guide to Jewish genetic disorders and screening. But that's not my topic, that's Dr. Glad's topic this morning. All right, so let's just start at the beginning. Does anybody here not understand the basic Mendelian genetics? Because you understand what recessive disease is? Right? Do not know, anybody not know? We'll just assume everyone knows. Okay. But the basic idea is that if you have two carriers, of the same, it's very important to understand, of the same recessively inherited disease, and they were to marry, there's a 1 in 4 chance of having affected offspring. 50% chance of having a carrier, 25% chance of having normal offspring. And I think this is something that confuses people, but it's important to understand it has to be the same disease. So if someone has a gene for cystic fibrosis and the other person in the marriage has a Tay-Sachs gene, then there's zero chance of the children having either of those diseases, right? So this is just another example. Here we have the normal individual marries a carrier. There is no chance of a child who is affected. 50% chance of carrier, 50% chance of a normal offspring. Now the bad news about recessively inherited diseases, right, is that an autosomal recessive gene can never be eradicated ethically by selective mating, because heterozygotes do not manifest disease. That is to say, that's what it means to be recessive in the simplest sense. You don't manifest the disease. And you can't ever remove it from the gene pool, because since having the gene, or once having the gene, you are asymptomatic. You would have to say to people who are completely healthy that they can't marry and have children. And that's not something that anybody would be willing to do. The good news is an autosomal recessive disease can be completely eradicated if no two carriers marry. So you can remove the gene, but we don't care about the gene, we care about the phenotype. You can remove the disease. When I say remove, you can't permanently remove it, but what you can do is keep it at bay, that is, keep it that no child will ever be born with that disease again if two carriers do not marry. We're putting aside the idea of mutation. That's not an issue for these diseases. Now, the question that arises are, what do you want out of this? So if the goal is to avoid marriages of carriers, it's best to avoid initial emotional contact. That'd be the best way to do it, right? That is, if no two carriers ever met, they would never marry, there would never be any children who had the disease. This can be accomplished by traditional shidduchim, arranged introductions, just so don't introduce any two carriers for the same disease, for the same trait. It can also be achieved by prior screening and discussing early in dating. I have to point out that we realized this morning that Dr. Glad and I have one overlap in what we're going to talk about. So there's some things I'm kind of going to skip or just gloss over, because that is what Dr. Glad is going to go into in more detail. Now, unlike screening for a dominant disease, screening for an autosomal recessive disease only has repercussions for the offspring. The important thing to understand is you walk in healthy to the test, and you walk out healthy from the test. And emotion is a very important concept. That is to say, a woman, I'm a radiologist, a woman walks in for a mammogram, walks in healthy. And if that mammogram shows a spiculated mass, she theoretically walks out sick. Now, obviously, she was sick before she walked in. But there's the emotional burden of knowing I'm about to have a test that could change my life. And that's also true for certain dominant diseases, which you can test for BRCA1 and 2 as an example. But it is not true for these diseases. The person being tested, and again, we're talking about testing that the carriers are going to walk in healthy, they're going to walk out healthy. We're not going to change anyone's life in that way. So how do you look at any halakhic question? Well, you carefully gather technical and situational information. You survey Jewish legal sources from the Bible to the 20th century. And you establish precedents from previous cases that might be applicable to the current case. Right? So in our case, we need to ask why, when, and who are we screening? So if you want to avoid preventable health problems, which is what the goal would be, right, there are different ways that you can approach it. If you want to avoid the potential for an affected child, then genetically screen the potential parents. If you screen the parents, then you can't even potentially have an affected child if these two carriers never marry. If you want to just prevent the creation of an affected child, then you do PGD, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. Before the Tay-Sachs screening test came about, there were people who were married. Let's say the screening test is now comes about, I think it's around 1971, and they find out they're both carriers. So now what do they do? Well, one way you could do it is Dr. Steinberg mentioned last night, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. Now you're kind of screening or testing each of the pre-embryos before you implant. And that could prevent creation of an affected child. And if you want to prevent an affected child from being born, then you have to talk about testing the fetus. And that is a little bit of a slippery slope. And if you remember last night, if you were there, my talk, the tumor from Moshe Feinstein about amniocentesis, this is the most problematic. You do not really want to get to the point where you're testing the fetus and discussing abortion. Now, it's not at the moment discussing the ethics of abortion, but I think there's nobody in the world, I think, who's pro-abortion, right? There's pro-choice, there's what they call pro-life, but no one's pro-abortion, and everyone in the world would like to avoid being in that kind of situation. Next question you have to ask is, what will we do with the results? So if you do genetic screening of potential parents, you can avoid marriage. That's one good thing if you find out the results. Right? Or you can conceive children by IVF. Right? If you do pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, you can then only implant unaffected pre-embryos, and that'll solve the problem. And if you test the fetus, you may want to issue abortion. So today I'm just going to talk about screening potential parents. Not amniocentesis, not things like that. But realize that the ethics of genetic screening is really tied to ethics of choosing characteristics of offspring, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, IVF, abortion. There's lots of questions that come up. In the issue of screening for these genetic diseases, there are two kinds of issues. There's the universal ethical issues, and there's the theological issues that we have. The universal ethical issues are issues of revealing information, do no harm. If I screen somebody, am I going to come up with information I'm going to give them that, as we'll talk about later, and as Dr. Steinberg mentioned last night, will be kind of tyranny of knowledge. Am I going to give them knowledge they didn't want to have and is going to affect their life? There's issues of informed consent. There's issues of confidentiality. Who should have access to the results? There's a whole slippery slope argument. Will screening lead to unethical behavior? For instance, abortion. And there's the issues of mass screening. There's advantages, there's disadvantages. Should we do mandatory screening? And you should realize there are tests, at least in the United States, for which there's mandatory screening. In Pennsylvania, every baby who's born is tested for fetal ketonuria, which is a disease that's recessively inherited. And the reason they screen is if you treat it early enough, I believe you can completely prevent any of the side effects. But that is one approach. If you screen everybody and everybody has the data, then you have more information to work with. So what are the theological issues we have as Jews? Issue, are we playing God, interfering with nature? The issue of giving bad news. Now, there is actually an issue, which I think we're going to get to, of giving bad news. It's called motzi diba huksil. It's not a given that you can just go to somebody and give them bad news. It's not a given you can go to somebody and tell them someone died. So that is an issue that does come up. There's the issue of confidentiality, which ties in with Lashon Hara. And there's the issue of lifnei iver, to put a stumbling block before the blind, which refers to the tshuva I talked about last night, which I think I have here today. So let's talk about the practical issues of screening. Is screening permitted or even obligatory? When should you test? Who should you test? And what are the ramifications of testing carrier positive before marriage versus after marriage? The question we have to ask to start with is very simple. There is a Torah obligation to guard your health. So it's kind of clear to people that you have to go to the doctor, that you have to take care of yourself. And that's easily understood in terms of normal illness and risky behavior. If you get sick, go to the doctor, right? Don't do behaviors that you think might endanger your life. But it's not so clear that guarding your life includes guarding your progeny. Whether marrying another carrier is a danger from which one is required to protect himself. Why would that be? Because generally we say that things that don't exist in the world don't have a lot of significance. That can there be an obligation on me to do something to protect an unborn child, and not just an unborn child, it's a child who will potentially exist if I marry somebody else. So this is a very amorphous idea. Is there such an obligation? So if you look in the Gemara, in Brachos 10a, there's a very interesting conversation. Hezekiah was the king, and Isaiah, Yeshua, was a prophet. And for whatever reason, Hashem wanted the two of them to get together. So the king says, let the prophet come to me, I'm the king. The king says, the prophet says, let the king come to me, because I'm a prophet. Talmud says, right, who is the master of all pshara, of making compromise? It's Hashem. So he made Hizkiyahu very, very sick, and then Isaiah came to do Bikur Kohen. The conversation goes like this, right? Hizkiyahu says to Yeshayahu, what's the reason for all this? Meaning, he's deathly ill. Why am I so sick? Yeshayahu says to him, it's because you did not engage in the midst of procreation. Hizkiyahu says, that was because I saw with Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration, that immortal children would come forth from me. He says, I know for sure that if I get married, my offspring are going to be really, really bad. Now, often anybody, biblical scholar, who was Hizkiyahu's son? Menashe, biggest Rasha, independent of any tshuva that happened later, biggest Rasha that, you know, ever ruled over Israel. So, Hizkiyahu says, isn't it better to do some, like, kind of pre, you know, needle screening, or actually, even before that, but predating screening? This is not a good idea. Nobody needs the son I'm going to have. I'm not going to get married. Right? Yeshayahu says to him, what concern are the hidden things of God to you? What you are commanded to do by God, you're required to do. What is good before God, he will do. So Yeshayahu, Isaiah says, none of your business. Torah says, Peruvu, have children. Not your business decide if they're good children or not good children. So where would this lead us at this point, would you think? Yes, screening or no screening? No screening. What's the practical outcome in Jewish law? So Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the question when, I think it was soon after Tay-Sachs testing came out. And he says, I've been asked my opinion regarding several questions. Is it proper for a boy or girl to endeavor to find out their carrier status? If it's desirable, should the test be done during youth or only once one reaches the age of marriage? Should the test be done publicly or privately? He said, I looked into these questions, and in my humble opinion, is that even though only a small minority of children are born with the disease, and it is appropriate to apply the verse, right? You should walk wholeheartedly with the Lord your God. And as Rashi explains it, walk with him in simplicity, wholeheartedly, and anticipate his support, and do not delve into the future. Nevertheless, since this information can be discovered so easily, it is possible to say that if one does not test himself, it is as if he is closing his eyes to seeing that which is possible to easily see. The equivalent of this is, you know what I-95 is? Major interstate from north to south, east coast. It's standing by the side of I-95, closing your eyes and saying, I have faith, and walking across traffic without looking. All you have to do is open your eyes, you can see what's going to happen. So Rav Moshe says, Emunah is a wonderful thing. And I don't know that he's absolutely saying that you have to, but he is saying that it would seem a wise thing to do when it's so easy to find out, and such a catastrophe. If you didn't test, he says, and since if God forbid this were to happen, to have Tay-Sachs baby, it would cause tremendous suffering for the parents of the child. It's appropriate for one who is ready to get married to test himself, and thus it's proper to publicize the test in newspapers and through other avenues that would inform the public that there's a test like this. I don't want to go too much into this. This is Dr. Glatt's topic. But what you do see is, despite this quote from the Gemara Brachos, Halach L'maaseh, Rav Moshe Feinstein said, yes, you should test. Now, one of the issues that's going to come up is, how should you test? And again, I'm going to try to play that down, because that is also such a glad stuff. But screening is not akin to playing God. Whatever is happening in the Gemara, right, was an issue of not doing the mitzvah of Peruvu. What Hizkiyahu wanted to do was mevatel, was to put aside a commandment in the Torah. And to that, Yeshayahu says, you can't do that. But clearly screening is not putting it aside. You can choose to marry whoever you want. Choosing not to marry someone else who's a carrier for the same recessive gene that you have certainly does not in any way circumvent any mitzvah in the Torah. So it is a completely different issue, no playing God. Screening is permitted, even encouraged in Jewish law. When should you test? I'm going to skip this for now because this is actually the issue of adolescent testing. I'm just going to say for now that the Moshe Feinstein clearly said, yes, test people before the time to marry. You should know that there's another point of view, right? So Moshe says, basically, test before people really get married. And the two important things that he said were, don't test too young because children are very sensitive. And if you tell a 12-year-old that they have that they're a carrier, they won't understand. They'll think they're genetic cripples. They'll think there's something wrong with them. And that basically there's a lot of ignorance in the world. And that even if you, Rav Moshe writes, even though the doctors tell people that if both people are not carriers, you can't have an infected child. For whatever reason, the public doesn't believe them. People look at it as a pagam. And therefore, he says, do it secretly, do it quietly, do it anonymously. That's the Moshe Feinstein approach. Right, Blythe takes a different approach. He says it is certainly simpler, less traumatic, less time-consuming, less costly to draw blood for a Tay-Sachs test in conjunction with a routine blood test performed by a pediatrician during childhood. Moreover, if neither parent is a Tay-Sachs carrier, there is no way that any of their children can possibly be a carrier. It is certainly cheaper and more efficient to screen two adults, even if they are beyond childbearing age, than to test each child with a union blessed for both offspring. Rabbi Blake's point of view is that ignorance is curable with education. The longer version of this is in the handout, not in the book, but in the handout that I gave the whole text for Rabbi Blake. Rabbi Blake thinks that the Dor Yeshurim concept, which I'm going to talk about very briefly and Rabbi Blake will talk about some more, is Byzantine. He thinks there's a hocus pocus. He says, bottom line, screen everybody. Maybe screen every child at birth. There will not be any stigma if everybody understands what carrier status means, and that is the end. So in the nutshell, Rav Moshe Feinstein says no mass screening for children, screen individuals when they reach marriageable age. And Rabbi Blythe says mass screen even children and young adolescents. Okay, so yes, we should screen. One way or another, whether you want to do it in an anonymous way, whether you want to do it in a way that's kind of not public, but basically the normal walking to a hospital and being screened, get screened. How about informing the patient of the carrier status? We generally approach knowledge as a liberating force. Knowledge makes us the master of our fate. But sometimes knowledge becomes the master and makes us the servants. When information causes anxiety but offers no way to reduce the anxiety, it controls us. Some argue that BRCA1 and 2 testing is like that. That is to say, if there was a test that you could have that would tell you that you're going to get a disease and you're going to die of it, and there's nothing you can do to treat, nothing you can do to cure it, would you want the test? Now, be very clear that BRCA1 and 2 is not exactly like that. It's more of a predisposition for breast cancer and ovarian cancer, as Dr. Steinberg mentioned last night. But Huntington's chorea, my understanding is like that. And there's actually an interesting case, which is Woody Guthrie, who wrote "This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is My Land," died of Huntington's chorea at a time when there was no test. When the test came out, his son Arlo Guthrie, I'm told this is apocryphal, but this is what I heard, was asked, "Do you want the test?" He said, "No. Why would I want to know, right, that I'm going to get this terrible disease? It's deteriorative. It's basically get worse, and then you die. Why would I want to know that?" Anyway, he's old enough to pretty clear doesn't have the disease. But that's the case where getting information does not allow you to do anything with it. There's no value to you except to know every day, maybe every time you have aching pain, maybe I'm dying. So is the knowledge gained from screening for recessively inherited diseases power or tyranny? Right? Because we say knowledge is power, sometimes we say tyranny of knowledge. Well, there's no question, right, that knowledge gained from a screening for recessively inherited diseases is power. You walk in healthy, you walk out healthy, you now have information that allows you to plan in a way that will avoid having sick children. In the best case, again, testing before marriage, and even before dating, right, allows you to help choose who you want to marry and avoid having these sick children. There is no control that this gives you. And just in case, no control over you that this gives you. Just in case people think that this idea, for instance, let's say Jewish Aaron, but any of this whole idea is just not romantic. We've kind of taken all the love out of dating and marriage. Tay-Sachs, and again, we keep talking about Tay-Sachs, that's just because it was one of the first recessive diseases that was described, but this applies to cystic fibrosis. It applies to, at the moment, there's 19 diseases that are being tested by a lot of these different organizations. Take Tay-Sachs. There's a 1 in 30 carrier rate among Ashkenazi Jews. What's the probability that if two Ashkenazi Jews marry randomly, that there's going to be a Tay-Sachs baby? No. 1 in 3,600, right? 1 in 900 chance that two random people, I assume that neither one knows that they're carrier, times 1/4. Now the question is this. You now know you're a carrier. And I say to you, okay, I'm removing from the dating scene every man or woman who's also carrier for Tay-Sachs. How many out of 100 potential spouses have I removed? 3. So if you think that this is like an onerous thing, it's not such an onerous thing. You can still marry 90, and that's if you don't intermarry. Why am I talking about intermarriage? You can marry a Sephardi, right? That's just based on the carrier rate among Ashkenazi, right? So the reality is, there's a tremendous advantage and a very small downside. So I just want to put it into kind of mathematical perspective. So who are you going to tell? Well, this, you're giving bad news, revealing information, confidentiality. Well, informing a carrier, particularly an adolescent, causes feelings of inadequacy, illusion of being genetically defective, fear. Well, revealing information should only cause feelings of inadequacy in children who do not understand what carrier status means. So do one of two things. Either educate the population to understand that being a carrier is not an illness, or screen only mature adults. You have that option, right? Again, that's not my discussion right now about adolescents in particular, but you have a choice. Wait till people understand and then screen, or just screen everybody early on and educate the population. I like to mention when I give this particular talk, right, it doesn't look like there's that many people in the room with glasses, right? But do you think there's a stigma attached to wearing glasses? America would be, there's no stigma attached to wearing glasses. But don't you feel like you are a ocular leper? No, the bottom line is that the population understands what glasses are. The answer is you don't see well, you wear glasses or contacts, and that's it. So education removes the stigma. Now, if there was no one in this room wearing glasses but one person, and no one had seen it before, you'd be staring at the person saying, what's wrong with them? That is the idea that says that education cures ignorance, and that's the idea of saying, one way or another, either everyone has to know, or the individuals being screened themselves have to understand that we have a sufficient age. How about the issue of giving information to begin with? Do not go as a talebearer among your people. Do not stand idly by. Your neighbor's blood is shed. Right? That's one. Do not speak Lashon Hara. Right? We also say, distance yourself from falsehood. Right? Am I allowed to tell people? Is this a problem? Right? Well, who should have access to the results? Judaism requires strict confidentiality in all private matters. Gossip is strictly forbidden, unless remaining silent will harm a third party. That's actually the rationale for why these two go together. Right? Basically, don't speak Lashon Hara unless your neighbor's blood will be shed, in which case you have to tell to avoid it. So who should have access to the results? Should relatives be informed? Right? That's a very interesting question, because I remember I was at Chag Tzedek one summer, and there was a case of BRCA 1 or 2, where the woman did not want her sister to know that she had tested positive because she was worried that the shidduch potential for the family was going to be destroyed. But that's not going to apply here, right? Because if POMP prevents the children being born, and if the rest of the family knows they have the same knowledge that they can use to prevent offspring from being born like that. Do you think the testing positive as a carrier before marriage will cause difficulty finding a mate? Well, it shouldn't if the prospective spouse is not a carrier. Because if you find out they're carriers, don't marry another carrier. Right? Although, as Ramosha says, you have to take into account the idea of ignorance. What are the ramifications of both partners testing positive as carriers after marriage? What are your options to avoid a sick child? Will screening lead to unethical behavior? Well, the alternatives, right, are more limited if you don't screen until after marriage, or if you were married before the test came out. Your choice is basically a sterile marriage, adoption or artificial insemination, surrogacy, amniocentesis and abortion, or pre-implantation genetic diagnosis. To make it pretty fast, sterile marriage is not permitted. Is not permitted. How do you know that? That's the case we said from the CCO. You're not allowed to deliberately avoid having offspring. Adoption, while meritorious, does not form as a procreation. So that's not really the solution. While we encourage adoption, it doesn't really allow the man to fulfill the mitzvah, right? Artificial insemination, which is not the topic for today, by a non-carrier donor, has issues of adultery. I'm not claiming that it is adultery, but that discussion comes up. Issues of paternity, issues of inheritance, and it does not fulfill the mitzvah of procreation if it's a sperm donor. Surrogacy has some similar issues. Issues of adultery, issues of maternity, like I talked about last night. Fundamental issue of buying and selling eggs and useful women's incubator for hire. Amniocentesis and abortion, which is obviously the hottest topic. Abortion is almost always reserved just for danger to the mother. Consensus in Jewish law is that one may not abort for fetal anomalies. There is a dissenting opinion. The majority opinion is from Moshe Feinstein that abortion is absolutely forbidden for Tay-Sachs and other similar diseases. Tzitz Eliezer says abortion is permitted for Tay-Sachs up to 7 months. There's no time today to go into that, but you should know there is that dissenting opinion. Amniocentesis also has a 1 in 200 risk of miscarriage. And the issue of Brit Me'iva, which I mentioned last night, which is if you do amniocentesis, you now put in front of a woman the possibility of having an abortion for whom many poskim say is not permitted. PGD is really the way to go. PGD is permitted to avoid disease. Excess embryos can be discarded or used for research, as Dr. Steinberg mentioned last night. It's ethically viable option for married couples. That is the way to go. And actually, this works out very well because I know Dr. Klein is going to speak about during training. So it was brief, but hopefully we'll give an overview of some of the issues that arise in genetic screening.